The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Thursday, September 5th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and it's got to be NFL kickoff tonight. I got my Denver Dabbers t-shirt on for today, and of course, the Denver Broncos are opening up against the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens, and everyone going there to Mile High Stadium, which is the only name I'll call it, everyone going to Mile High Stadium tonight has to see a billboard from the Marijuana Policy Project asking why the NFL is bothering to punish players who choose a safer substance than alcohol now that it's legal in Denver, and for that matter, Seattle. So kudos to MPP for that, and let's get some football going. It's going to be a good season. Also, tonight, 10 o'clock tonight, for those of you here in Portland, Oregon, I will be a guest on the Ed Foreman Show. It's a live kind of comedy late night talk show that takes place at Al's Den, this excellent bar in Portland, Oregon, at the Crystal Hotel downtown. So me and Bacon Dan will be down there. We'll get some video and show it to you on a later show. Also, speaking of all sorts of stuff coming up, we've got tomorrow night, Friday night, me and Herb Thrasher will be bringing you a live edition of the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour from the world-famous Cannabis Cafe. We're going to be going in there. We met with Madeline and Ralph and all the folks there. Got everything scoped out. Going to be a great night. I think Lucero is stopping by as well, so make sure you check that out. We'll give you all sorts of coverage from the world-famous Cannabis Cafe on Friday. And then, of course, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, if you're still here in Portland, it's the Portland Hemp Stock. Make sure you visit Herb Thrasher at his booth. He'll be glad to see you. Or you can follow me up to Seattle for the Seattle Cannabis Cup. I'll be streaming from there as best I can. Again, depends on the Wi-Fi, but we'll be streaming from there at the Cannabis Cup doing our 420 radio drug test and having all sorts of fun. We'll be getting plenty of video and interviews from that. So all of that's coming up in the next couple of days for the Russ Belville Show. Coming up on today's show, we got John Beza from Leap, a former Sing Sing guard, prison guard, and NYPD undercover narcotics detective. We'll ask him about the NYPD stop and frisk and this whole parallel construction scandal we've heard about recently. Also, Pony Boy from Los Marihuanos will be calling in for our Groovin' Thursday Daily Toker tune. He's calling in live to debut a new tune he's got with Marlon Asher and Ed King called We Dabbin', and of course we'll preview his appearance coming up at the Portland Hemp Stock. And then next weekend I'm off to Boston for the Freedom Rally. Between Hemp Stock and the Freedom Rally, I'm talking to some producers from Nat Geo's Drugs Inc. here in Portland. All sorts of stuff to cover on the Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Everywhere you go in Washington State, things are greener than ever. Why? Because last November, Washington voters made adult recreational use of cannabis legal, which is why the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup is coming to Seattle once again to salute Washington's historic victory. If you love cannabis, then get yourself over to the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup on September 7th and 8th as the marijuana community gathers in force to celebrate our newfound freedom. Meet the businesses of the emerging cannabis industry. Learn about cultivation, topical oils, concentrates, edibles, and more. Sample dabs, buds, and delectable morsels of cannabis cuisine. Then rock out on Saturday night at our Smokin' Hot Concert featuring Slightly Stupid and Redman. And of course, on Sunday evening, we present the U.S. Cannabis Cups for the top indica, sativas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates of the great state of Washington. Plus, we honor professional traveler and outspoken cannabis advocate Rick Steves with the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award. Come to Fremont Studios on September 7th and 8th in Seattle for a historic celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
This is the brain activity of a normal 14-year-old. This is the brain activity of a 14-year-old after smoking marijuana. If you use pot, you're not using your brain.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, September 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Mexico City considers legalizing marijuana and creating smoking clubs, from FoxNews.com. Mexico City Council is considering the legalization of cannabis plants and creation of private marijuana smoking clubs. The capital hosted a three-day forum on drug policy amid a growing debate in Latin America over the course of the region's deadly struggle against trafficking, with President Enrique Peña Nieto taking a stance against legalization. Estela Damian, a councilman on the city's ruling Democratic Revolution Party, said AFP the proposals on the table include allowing the cultivation of three cannabis plants per person, as well as a system of cooperatives or nonprofit private clubs. Mexico City, home to almost 9 million people, plus 11 million more in its suburbs, has stood out from the rest of the country in recent years by legalizing abortion and allowing gay marriage. Mexico currently allows the possession of a maximum of 5 grams of marijuana for personal consumption, but growing and selling weed is still illegal. North Carolina legislature overrides drug test bill veto, from the Weed Blog. North Carolina's Republican Governor Pat McCrory last month vetoed a welfare drug testing bill championed by his own party in the legislature, saying it was, quote, a recipe for government overreach and unnecessary government intrusion, end quote, and, quote, not a smart way to combat drug abuse, end quote. But this week, the legislature managed to override that veto. In votes in the General Assembly Tuesday and the Senate Wednesday, the Republican-controlled legislature chose to move forward with the drug tests, which will require some welfare applicants to pay out of their own pockets for drug testing before they can receive benefits. 6 Democrats joined the Republicans in the Assembly, making the veto possible by a margin of just 2 of the needed 3/5 of elected members. 3 Republican Assembly members voted against it. In the Senate, 3 Democrats voted for the override, with no Republicans voting against it. Republican senators had enough votes to override the veto on their own. Senate state rules Seattle to get 21 of 334 marijuana retail stores, from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. When the state starts handing out licenses for selling marijuana, Seattle could be home to 21 retail stores. These stores can't sell anything other than pot-infused products and paraphernalia, and cannot be part of another store. The total of 334 stores would be allocated by population and accessibility. Those who qualify for retail licenses will only be able to get 3 location licenses, or not more than 33% of the local market where they intend to open stores. They also cannot sell over the internet. From the state rules frequently asked questions, quote, you cannot set up a store within 1,000 feet of any elementary or secondary school, playground, recreational center or facility, child care center, public park, public transit center, library, or game arcade that allows minors to enter. Local authorities will also be notified and have an opportunity to object, end quote. Colorado marijuana law worries Cheyenne's police chief from Trib.com. The impact on Cheyenne of Colorado's new law allowing the recreational use of marijuana isn't known yet because the neighboring state is still working on rules to govern sales, the city's police chief, Brian Kozak, says. He notes the heavier use of marijuana in Colorado is keeping the DEA agents busy with postal interdictions or the interception of marijuana shipments to other states for sale. In 2012, agents seized 274 Colorado shipments destined for 37 states, compared to 54 shipments in 2005, Kozak said. Each shipment averaged 4 pounds of marijuana. One of the meeting's attendees was Charlie Lake of Casper, Wyoming. He is the founder and executive director of Weed the People, a nonprofit group promoting the legalization of marijuana for medical use. Lake said the bill will be presented to voters as a ballot initiative in the 2016 general election. Ricky Williams smoked marijuana the night before a game, says teammate from BleacherReport.com. Former Miami Dolphins linebacker Channing Crowder claims that his ex-teammate, superstar running back Ricky Williams, used to smoke marijuana the night before games. A Thursday report from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk documented what Crowder had to say on Miami's WQAM radio station on Wednesday. Quote, "Remember that Buffalo game, the 200-yard game? Smoked the night before. Talk to Ricky. He was doing it. That's what he did. Ricky had social anxiety and he smoked weed. Ricky's marijuana didn't affect the team until he got caught smoking. Him smoking weed, sitting in his house smoking weed, didn't affect anybody but Ricky. He got high, then he sobered up, and then he went to practice the next day." Florio suggests the prominence of marijuana in the NFL is greater than people realize. He explains that players not in the substance abuse program only get tested for it once a year, and the testing window opens April 20th. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, September 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to debunk the often cited 8-point IQ loss for adolescent users of marijuana by showing data how poverty much more greatly affects one's IQ. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We are listener supported. Please make your donations today at 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, we've made a call on the controversial marijuana ballot question, Amendment 64. Floyd, we can safely say this is going to pass.
It is legal in the Constitution to possess and grow up to 6 plants.
You cannot be arrested for being in possession of an ounce of marijuana.
Colorado and the state of Washington, they voted to legalize marijuana, not for medical use, but for recreational use.
Is the beginning of taking apart prohibition one state at a time. That's how they did it 80 years ago against alcohol. That's how we're going to do it now against marijuana.
We are the champions. We are the champions.
Welcome back. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And today I wanted to attack a particular talking point that we hear from the prohibitionists lately, that the use of marijuana, especially among adolescents who use it chronically, leads to an 8-point drop in IQ. You've probably heard this one. Smoking pot's going to make you stupid. God knows what it must have done to Carl Sagan. So this next story that I found really doesn't have anything to do with pot per se. But I thought it was very interesting in contrast to that debunked 8-point IQ drop thing. And it's a story that's coming out of theatlanticcities.com entitled How Poverty Taxes the Brain. And this is very interesting data and studies they did. The report opens up by saying human mental bandwidth is finite. We only have so much cognitive capacity to spread around. It's a scarce resource. Now, if the term bandwidth is unfamiliar to some of you that don't have, you know, IT background or whatever, it's how much computation can be conducted at once. How much can your brain handle? How much can you multitask, in a sense, is what we're talking about here. So they did some experiments. These were not conducted by just any old researchers. These are people at Princeton, Harvard, and the University of Warwick in Rhode Island. And what they did is they surveyed people at the mall, right? They went to a New Jersey mall and they randomly picked 400 people. And what they were doing was trying to find out if being worried about your bills, if being worried about your financial system situation made you more or less likely to be able to handle cognitive tasks. And so what they did with these 400 random people, they had them respond to a scenario where their car needed repairs. And how would they pay for the repairs? Would they pay it in full? Would they take out a loan? Or would they put off the repair? How would they make their decision as to what to do about their car that needs repairs? But the difference was some of the people were given a scenario where the car repairs cost $150. Other people were given a scenario where the car repairs cost $1,500, you know, 10 times as much, right? And the people who were being asked at the mall here, they ranged in income from $20,000 a year to $70,000 a year. So a good cross-section of people from middle class to lower class. And here's what they found. When they divided the people by whether they were poor, you know, comparatively speaking, poor versus rich, they found that when they had the people with a $150 car repair problem and they had to do all these cognitive tasks, you know, identify shapes and numbers and things like that. When they had to do these cognitive tasks, when they had the $150 bill to worry about, both poor and rich people pretty much performed the same. But when they looked at the groups that had the $1,500 car repair bill, the poor people performed much worse when they had to worry about that $1,500 bill. Simply asking these people to think about a $1,500 hypothetical bill caused them to perform worse on these cognitive tasks. And the way that this story puts it and the way these researchers put it is they said that the condition of poverty imposed a mental burden akin to losing 13 IQ points, or comparable to the cognitive difference that's been observed between chronic alcoholics and normal adults. So while Kevin Sabat and the Project Sam people are demonizing this idea that somehow smoking a lot of pot before the age of 15 is going to lead to 8 IQ point drop, we find people of all ages who chronically drink alcohol, people of all ages who are living in poverty, have an equivalent 13 point IQ drop. Now, lest you think this is an American phenomenon. Oh, we got people at the mall. And keep in mind, we're talking about people who went to the mall who have at least $20,000 in income. This doesn't even begin to touch the people who are living in real poverty here in America. So to make sure it wasn't just an American thing, these researchers also did a similar study in India with a group of sugarcane farmers. Now, the way that their cycle of economics works is right after the harvest, they're rich, right? They get about 60% of their annual income in one lump sum right after the harvest. And then the rest of the year, they get the other 40% of their income, and they generally live in poverty. And what they found is that during that period of being rich right after the harvest, they were snap, snap, real good at the cognitive tasks. As soon as they went into the poverty state, it was harder for them to do those tasks. Now, the reason this is so important to us is because it goes back to that 8-point IQ drop. When this figure first came out, it was widely criticized by the scientific community. And a researcher, Ole Rogerberg, actually recalculated all the numbers, reworked all the data, and found that poverty was a better explanation as to why some of these kids had the 8-point IQ drop than as to whether or not they smoked pot. These data, to me, further bolster that assumption. We find that people in poverty often turn to marijuana to relieve the stress of their lives, to deal with medical situations they can't afford prescriptions for, they don't have health insurance. And it seems to me that those factors of poverty that would lead people into using marijuana more likely are the same factors of poverty that are taxing the bandwidth, their cognitive bandwidth, and leading to these lower IQ results. And keep in mind, this was not a causal thing where people with lower IQs happen to end up in poverty. They found that this poverty affected the IQ even if when people were richer before and lost money and became in poverty, it affected their IQ. There are so many better explanations for what they found in that 8-point IQ drop, poverty being the number one explanation. We'll get more into this debunking in the Radical Rant. Stay tuned. Pony Boys coming next.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hoping you're enjoying your 20 after break. And normally, Bago Schwago would be calling in with our Daily Toker Tune for Groovin' Thursday. He's on the move, still looking for some bandwidth at his new house. But that's all good, because on the phone today, we got a very special guest. We got Pony Boy from Los Marihuanos. How you doing, my nugget?
I'm doing wonderful, my nugget.
So good to hear from you. I've got a picture up on the screen of I don't remember what event we're at, but you were there with the Hemp TV people and you and me, and we're just hanging out there. But good to see you again, and I understand you're making your way here to Portland.
Yes, I'll be on my way tomorrow in the afternoon. I'll be arriving about 6 to do the... And Portland, you know, I renamed Portland, Oregon to Portland Oil Gone. and we'll be reaching Portland, Oregon at 6, ready to go on the Mr. Paul Sanford's cable show, the THCF show. And me and Ed King will be performing at the end of the show. And, man, we're just excited. This is, wow, I was kind of letting a couple years go by. But they reminded me that we are 9-year Portland, Oregon players. 9 years in a row.
That's right.
My nugget.
That's right, man. And I've been with you for a lot of those. I got to be up in Seattle this time, unfortunately. But hey, we got the Cannabis Common Sense show runs in replays here on 420 Radio, so people will get to see your appearance in the replays. And also, we're doing a gig Friday night at the world famous Cannabis Cafe. I wonder if you'll make it there after the show.
Well, guess what? I am going to make it there after the show. Are you talking about which night are you talking about, right?
Friday night after Paul Stanford's show. I'm going to be out there at the Cannabis Cafe streaming live.
I'm there with you. I'll be there by your side chilling with you. And, you know, I got to go see my girl Madeline Martinez, mm-hmm. A champion. Also, man, in the in the fight for the legalization of marijuana, just like you.
Yep.
Man, I'm just so happy that I got to meet you guys. And look at 9 years later, we've been knowing each other, man. And like I said, Portland is my second home. And yeah, I will be there to join you for sure for a nice smoke out and a nice puffed puff.
Oh, it's going to be good. And, of course, this culminates in the weekend at the Portland Hempstock at Kelly Point Park. I imagine you're performing out there?
Yes, we're headlining the show this year. We're stoked. Of course, we go on at our usual time, 4:20. And we're just mad excited, man. We got all new music. Los Marihuana's got all new music. We've been blessed with 10 shows this year. Also going to Amsterdam with my man Brett Vogt from ApothecaryGenetics.com. We'll be going to Amsterdam this year for the Cup. There's so much stuff happening, man. There's good things. I'm the luckiest guy in the whole wide world, Russ. I've been blessed, and I've just been blessed to have friends like you and other people, man, that believe in our music.
Right.
And I'm just happy, man. In these 9 years, I'm still going. I'm still preaching the word. Hemp will save the world. And free the weed, and that's one thing that we will be about forever. Marijuanas will always be spreading that message, for we are messengers sent by Jack Hare, you know what I'm saying, to spread the gospel that hemp will save the world, my nugget. And I believe it, and I stand tall by it.
You know, you mentioned a lot of our friends, and some of our friends haven't been out to see all these amazing things happening, the legalization happening and 20 medical marijuana states. Wonder if you've been in touch recently with our friend Eddie Lapp or any of our other imprisoned POWs and gotten their reaction to this stuff.
Well, on Eddie Lapp, I have not spoken with Eddie Lapp. I want to, again, he's the most mentioned man on out of all of our CDs and music. On CD, he's the most mentioned man. Like, the reason why I say the most mentioned man on my CD is because he's a real good friend. I'm not only saying free Eddie Lapp, but I'm saying free Mark Emery and free all the people that aren't famous, Russ.
Yeah.
What about the people that aren't famous that happen to get their lives taken away? Just people, regular growers. That's what I'm standing up for, and I'm standing up also for the popular guys. But I'm standing up for the small guy that went to jail or to prison and got their life taken away by losing their family, their jobs. You know, just crazy stuff. I'm for the underdogs, definitely.
Right on. All right, so we got to get to a tune here. You got a new track, and I see not only is Ed King on this track, you got Marlon Asher to drop on this tune as well. Tell folks about this track, We Dabbin'.
We Dabbin', of course, my man Ed King came up with the concept with Marlon Asher, and I guess Marlon Asher asked Ed King, hey, why don't we bring, Pony Boy for this song? I'm a very good friend of Marlon Asher. We're going to be doing some tracks together in the future. And it came together after they did their verses. They sent the song to me, and I put, my singing, rapping style to it, and it ended up being a hit, so I'm very proud of the song. Like I said, Ed King, Los Marihuanos, and my real good friend Marlon Asher, we dabbing, my nugget.
Right on. Now, if people want to get in touch with Pony Boy and Los Marihuanos, find out where you're playing and all that, what's the web or Facebook they need to know?
Well, of course, Facebook, Pony, but my brand new one, I have three pages. One of them no one can get on. That's why I started another page. Of course, PONY/BOY, Los Marihuanos. Or please, we're on Instagram, Los Marihuanos. Tweet, LinkedIn, Chrome, Tome, take me back home. We're on everything. You'll be able to find us. You'll be able to find us on all media for sure.
Right on. Pony Boy Los Marihuanos with Marlon Asher and Ed King. This is We Dabbin'. Thanks, Pony. We'll see you tomorrow.
Marlon Asher alongside tomorrow, Ed King.
We're keeping it smooth. Alongside Pony Boy. Pony Boy. We're dabbing. Elaborate bombs, barrels of smoke, like cannons were drawn. Take you a climb and pass it along. Live on the spinach I get from the coast. Spray in the dish, it fizzes to grow. Stick with the flow, rinse in the stroke. Simple as shit, since picking your nose. Edward King, no run of the mill. Cali green, I'm I'm loving it still. Nugs of the kill, stuff for the drill. Always get love when up in the hills. Heat in the nail, we getting it hot. You probably guess I'm lifted a lot. Bit of the wax, you're hitting the spot. Don't take my word, you give it a shot.
We're diving.
This is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at norml.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody, and time for our regular Leap segment. And on today's show, got a very interesting guest for you from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. John Beza is joining us, and my apologies if I've mispronounced your name, John.
No, you pronounced it correctly. I appreciate that.
Fantastic. A good guess on my part. All right, John. So I was checking out your bio, and what really stood out to me are a couple of things. Your experience as a correctional officer at the Sing Sing prison, the notorious prison in New York, as well as your work as an undercover NYPD narcotics detective. And I wanted to start with maybe the prison angle first, because we keep hearing from some of these people who are against marijuana legalization that the prisons really aren't filled up with people that smoke pot. And I'm just wondering how much marijuana, how many people who were there because of marijuana did you end up seeing in the prison system?
Well, when I worked in Sing Sing prison, it was a maximum security. So there were a lot of murderers, but it was drug crime related. But when I worked in other jails, I've also worked in county jails as well, and those jails are filled up with nonviolent drug offenders. Very often, marijuana, especially nowadays, the growing of marijuana plants and stuff like that, and it just takes up so much space. There are quite a few people in prison for that and in jail.
And in the various levels from county jail all the way up to Sing Sing, was there a lot of marijuana available to the prisoners? Were they able to get their hands on it?
Oh, certainly. In fact, I've actually confiscated some from, when I worked there in, hidden in spots and, under door frames inside the, a hole in the wall, whatever you could find, wherever you could hide something, they would hide it. And it was not difficult to get any type of drugs at all into, whether it be a maximum security or a county jail, which I worked in both.
Mm. And of course, the people who are for prohibition think we can keep them out of an entire free country. How silly is that?
It's extremely silly. It's preposterous. It's the most ridiculous argument that I've ever heard. And one cannot mess with desire. People have a desire to utilize drugs, whether it be alcohol or anything else. And legislation cannot mess with desire, and we shouldn't be in the business of legislating morality.
Another part of your background, of course, was as a NYPD narcotics detective. And, of course, NYPD's been in the news a lot lately with regard to their stop and frisk program that has led to, 50,000 marijuana arrests a year, about 90% of them for Black and Latino people. Were you there during the ramp up of the stop and frisk program, and how did you see it affecting your policing?
Well, the stop and frisk program was in place when I was there, but it wasn't as large as it is now, and with the quotas that they have. But basically, what stop and frisk used to be, and probably still is, I'm not there, so I don't want to say it is exactly. But what it was when I was there was basically you throw some people up against the wall, find out what's in their pockets, and if they have, depending on what precinct you work in, if they have marijuana, you're going to arrest them for that. Mostly in the less violent, I worked in violent precincts. So it's funny because in the more violent precincts per capita, the marijuana, the idea of marijuana would be almost laughable to some cops who work in the ghetto. But they're few and far between, those ghetto areas.
Now, as a police officer, and I speak to, every 2 weeks I speak to someone from LEAP, and it seems most of you got into the work because you wanted to help people. You wanted to protect people. How did you feel that your work as a narcotics detective was helping people? And what was it that gave you the epiphany to change your mind and join LEAP?
Well, that's easy. When I was in the police force in narcotics, I thought, I was doing this. I was brainwashed. I thought I was doing this great thing, stopping drugs, helping kids and all this. And as I went along, actually being a real undercover, no ID, no gun and everything, I was actually robbed at gunpoint of $16,000 of the city's money, and I was almost killed. I was almost basically assassinated. And at that time, at that very moment, my whole entire view of the drug war and actually of life itself changed completely, and I never made another buy after that. And I was completely changed my mind about the drug war completely, and many other things as well.
Did you immediately leave narcotics work, or what happened after this realization?
Yeah, I never made another buy. Actually, I was transferred because I had been making a lot of buys, and I was actually considered good at what I did. I don't know. I guess I'm a good BSer. But anyway, I was transferred to a major case unit, but there I decided to become an equipment man while I put my transfer in for the special victim squad, which is the sex crime squad. I felt that I needed to get away, as far away from narcotics as I could, as far away from something that has to deal with it. And of course, it can be involved in everything, but when you talk about rapes and so forth and child abuse, I wasn't dealing with narcotics anymore. And that's what I wanted. And I turned down a good transfer to the Drug Enforcement Task Force for that. I turned down that transfer.
In speaking to a lot of LEAP officers, they are very dedicated now to spreading the truth about this and going out and explaining to people how prohibition's the problem, not necessarily the drugs. Is there any element of regret to that, or a feeling like you need to make amends for people whose lives got ruined in the past from your work?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. I'm guilty of violating hundreds, if not thousands, of people's civil rights and, you know, their basic right to possess property. And, I mean, this is, to me, it's an issue of, you know, you want to put something in your body, you go ahead and do it, as long as you don't harm anybody else, you know, the non-aggression principle. And to me, I mean, I look back on it, and it's not just regret. It's kind of horror that I look back that I was that uneducated and that brainwashed, and just like many people are. And, you know, I am to fault for people being put into jail. There's no doubt. And I take that on myself, and I admit that fully and completely to everybody.
Yeah, that's remarkable to hear. And John, in again, talking to a lot of LEAP officers, we're very, of course, very proud of the work that you're all doing, and you're really breaking through. And I think to a large degree, the public has broken through on this issue. We see poll. In fact, I just saw a poll today coming out of Louisiana, of all places, where there was 53% support for marijuana legalization, at least. So that battle seems to be we're making great strides. But in dealing with your former colleagues in law enforcement, do you find they're coming around to this? And what's it going to take to finally get organizations like NYPD to heed Commissioner Kelly's stop and frisk priorities and to reduce this over-policing?
I mean, obviously it's education. And I think it's more police coming out and realizing it. I mean, many of my fellow narcotics cops who have retired and I've kept in contact with, do think that the drug war is a failure, and they think it's a fraud. But you know, they're not involved with LEAP, and I try to get as many people involved in LEAP as possible to let people know that, hey, cops who have been on the front lines, we know that this war on drugs is a failure, and any cop in a ghetto or anywhere in the United States worth his salt knows that it's a failure. And you know, but education is the main thing, and you have to have. You know, we hope to have statesmen out there, you know, that are not politicians, that go out there and actually, you know, go up there and say, listen, we need to legalize this. And this also causes a disparity in the African-American community, where we have so many arrests there, involved there. It's ridiculous. That's like the stop question and frisk thing. It's disproportionate.
How much of this, you know, of law enforcement to using these stop and frisk tactics and generally being against legalization? I mean, I just recently saw some chiefs of police that were against it, and I can't remember which state I was talking about. But how much of this do you think is cynical on their part, where they know marijuana is not really the problem and nobody's really a problem that's using marijuana, but marijuana provides a handy tool for them to shake down people in the neighborhood to find worse crimes?
Well, I think that they do. They think they do that. They think they would get somebody growing 20 pot plants, and they're gonna, you know, they feel like they've taken down an empire, and it's ridiculous. But you know what it is? Really, it's the money. It's the money. They get money coming in because they get federal money. It's basically the drug and, you know, the war on drug industrial complex. You know, they make money, and then they. That's why you'll see the chiefs of police supporting this drug war, where you'll see more cops on the street who would be against the drug war. And I'm not saying it would be, you know, the majority. I'm just saying you're going to see more cops on the street against the drug war, because they're not the ones making the money off it. It would be the police departments and the chiefs who actually represent those departments and federal agencies. And, you know, it's all about money, really. It really is.
And speaking of the money of this, it seems like to me the focus on, you know, on LEAP's point of view is about markets and the illegality of those markets. We hear a lot of these new kinder, gentler drug warriors saying, you know, we shouldn't punish people who possess certain drugs. But they always leave out the fact that to possess those drugs, somebody had to manufacture them. Somebody had to sell them. So you know, working for LEAP, I guess what I'm getting to here is that the legalizing marijuana argument's a pretty easy one to make these days, but legalizing coke, meth, and heroin is still a tough row to hoe. How do you explain that to people who might support marijuana legalization but are still scared of other drugs?
What I tried to explain to them is I work on the marijuana issue first. It does seem to be the easiest to work on. And then what I do is I talk about, you know, you owning your body, or you allowed to, you know, do you want to be able to drink alcohol in your house? Do you want to be able to possess alcohol or purchase alcohol? Well, yeah, well, is that not a more dangerous drug than, you know, cocaine or heroin or so forth, considering the, you know, the fatalities and so forth? Yeah. And I'll get into conversations with people and try to impress upon them that, hey, we can put into our bodies what we want as long as we don't hurt anybody else. And sometimes it's hard, you know, it's hard to get people's minds wrapped around that, but I try to do that as much as possible. And I know Leap does. And, you know, Leap, I believe that you can't go half-baked into this and say, well, I just want to decriminalize. Decriminalize is not a, I don't like that word at all. I just say either you're going to legalize it or you're not, because you keep an illegal market. If you don't let the free market flow, you are going to have this illicit underground black market, and it's going to cause crime. And real quickly, in the ghetto precinct I worked at up in Harlem, it was less than one square mile, and there were about 60 or 70 homicides a year. And I can tell you, I mean, this is not scientific, but I could say that about 98, 99% of those homicides were drug-related. So this we're just perpetuating this as we continue.
Yeah, John Beza from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Once again, we thank you for all your work. And if you got a contact, would you like to give that to anyone if they'd like to contact you further?
Yeah, they can contact me at john.j.beza@gmail.com. John.j.beza, B-A-E-Z-A, @gmail.com. Anybody can contact me. I'm happy to talk to them.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate your service, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Thank you, Russ.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show.
When we come back, time for a radical rant. Kevin Sabet's at it again.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the...
Hey, Joey! I got some stuff you just gotta try.
What is it?
Pot.
You know, marijuana.
Oh, well, I don't know.
What, chicken?
Joey's in a jam. What should he do? Cake.
Get a pizza.
Excellent. Get a pizza.
Get real.
Get
you got it. Let's see if Joey's that smart.
I'm not chicken. You're a turkey.
He's right. Drug dealers are dorks. Don't even talk to him.
Cowabunga!
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Once again, my one non-pot-smoking friend, the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet, is out there, and today, actually it was yesterday, he posted an op-ed at the Christian Science Monitor that was entitled Seven Big Myths About Marijuana. I've listed them up here on the screen if you'd like to follow along. We'll just debunk them one by one because they're basically the foundations of his new book, Reefer Sanity. And, of course, in Orwellian doublespeak, it's the most insane stuff about marijuana you'll ever read. We will give you a full book review as soon as we get our copy. But here we go. Here are some of the seven big myths about marijuana, according to Kevin Sabet. And let's see here. Number one, marijuana is harmless and non-addictive. Well, this is what we call a straw man argument, because nobody out here is saying that marijuana is harmless and non-addictive. Now, is it less harmful than alcohol and tobacco? Absolutely. Is it less harmful than the prescription drugs that people are taking daily? Absolutely. Is it less harmful than, say, even aspirin? Mm-hmm. Yes, yes it is. And as far as addictive, far less addictive than tobacco, alcohol, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, about as addictive as caffeine. So nobody is saying it's harmless and non-addictive. Nice job fighting the straw man. Now, in fighting the straw man here, he does say, admittedly, marijuana is not as dangerous as cocaine or heroin, but to say it's harmless or non-addictive is to deny science. Again, none of us are saying it's harmless and non-addictive. He goes out with the 1 out of 6 adolescents who try the drug will develop an addiction. That's a stat we've debunked many times. Basically, they added together the percentages from a number of the age groups between 12 and 17 to come up with that number. Been very debunked. But here's an easy debunk of the 1 of 6 thing. Think about how many kids there are. And there's how many a million of them or so that try pot every year. And if 1 out of 6 of them became addicted, then wouldn't they continue to be smoking as they get older? And yet we find the rates of marijuana smoking drop year after year after year after about age 18. So terribly addictive. Also, Kevin likes to say today's marijuana is some 5 to 6 times what it was in the 1960s and 70s. 5 to 6 times more potent than the 60s and 70s. Which is half BS because there wasn't a way of testing marijuana potency in the 1960s. But in the 1970s, the marijuana that was tested was marijuana that was left in hot, dry lockers for a long period of time, months and months. And so it had actually degraded. So they were starting with a baseline that was far lower than what the marijuana would have been if they'd actually got it when it was fresh. And again, 5 to 6 times more potent really doesn't matter when Marinol is 100% potent, and they seem to think that one's okay. They also like to say, he also says there's 400,000 emergency room visits in 2008 due to things like acute psychotic episodes and car crashes. Those might be a couple of things, but most of the things in those emergency room visit data are people who show up in an emergency room for whatever reason, and then when the doctors find out they've got marijuana in their system, ooh, that's a marijuana emergency room visit. Like, if you go skiing and break your leg and go to the emergency room and you smoked a joint a couple of days ago and they find the pot metabolites in your system, you're there for a marijuana-related emergency room visit. Ooh. He also goes on here to talk about marijuana's connection with schizophrenia, doubling risk of car crashes, reducing IQ by 8 points. We've debunked these so many times. I'm just going to move on because there's many more myths to get to. Myth number 2. Smoked or eaten marijuana is not medicine. Well, I guess it depends on how you define medicine. If you define medicine as a substance that has been evaluated by the FDA and deemed a legal medication in the United States, you know, like Vioxx and Fen-Phen, yeah, then it's not a medicine. But if, like most sane, common sense people, you define medicine as something you take that makes you better, then by God, smoked and eaten marijuana is certainly medicine. He tries again to say this patient shouldn't smoke opium or inject heroin to get morphine. But the reason that you can say that is because morphine exists. With cannabis, it is better in its raw form than the other forms that are made from it. Patients report much better results with cannabis than they do Marinol, the morphine of marijuana. And Kevin tries to always come off as being compassionate, saying it's not to deny patients a medication that can help them, but to prevent smoked or eaten marijuana from becoming a smokescreen for recreational use. Got it, cancer patient? We can't let you smoke a doobie because some recreational smoker might smoke a doobie. You need to suffer so that we can try to stop the people from using it recreationally, which, of course, we've never succeeded at. His third myth from Kevin Sabet here. Countless people are behind bars for simply smoking marijuana. Actually, it says simply for smoking marijuana. And this is his, again, his reasoning that 0.3% of state prison inmates are there for smoking marijuana. 0.3%. Well, gee, considering there's what, 1.5 million state inmates? What does that work out to 4,000 some odd people in jail simply for smoking marijuana? It ain't nobody. But furthermore, he ignores all the people that get there for a probation violation because they had a firearm in the house, and that's a gun violation, because they had kids in the house, they get taken away for child endangerment, because of all sorts of things. If they were conspiring with someone, if they were growing a plant, if they were processing a plant, if they had their possession of marijuana in separate baggies so that they're deemed to be possession with intent to distribute, those are all sorts of reasons people end up in prison or in jail for marijuana that don't end up in that state prison statistic he so likes to cite. And furthermore, he goes on to say most people arrested for marijuana use are cited with a ticket. Very few serve time behind bars. Well, that's just an out and out lie. Decriminalization only exists in, what is it, 15 states in the United States? So many are changing. I don't know about if I've got the exact right number yet. In the rest of those states, 35 of them, it's an arrest. It's a misdemeanor, at least. In Florida, it's a felony for 3/4 of an ounce. Number 4 myth from Kevin Sabet. The legality of alcohol and tobacco strengthen the case for legal marijuana. Well, I don't ever recall saying it that way. I recall saying that the failed prohibition of alcohol and the successful regulation of tobacco make for good arguments for legal use of marijuana. We've gotten tobacco use down among 12th graders in this country from 70% lifetime use when I was in high school to 40% lifetime use today. And tobacco is available to kids age 18 or 19 in this country, completely legal, marketed by big tobacco, and yet we reduced it 30 percentage points. Why wouldn't that be a good way to deal with marijuana, especially since more kids are smoking marijuana now than smoking cigarettes? And I love this point of Kevin Sabet's. Alcohol happens to be legal for cultural reasons. Oh, so you're admitting that our drug policy isn't really based on the science or how much harm it may cause or how much tax revenue we may generate. It's really just a culture thing. It's a litmus test. It's a cultural litmus test. Alcohol's popular, so we can have it. Marijuana is used by stoners, so we can't. Well, here's a little note about marijuana culture. We have had hemp culture in this country since 1611. We have had medical marijuana culture in this country since 1840. We've had recreational marijuana in this culture, at least among the minorities, since 1900. And we've had popular mainstream white folk culture of marijuana since the 1960s. Just give us a number. How many years or how many people have to use it before it's culturally okay not to lock them up for simple possession? The number 5 myth. Legal marijuana will solve government budget problems. Again, a straw man. Nobody said legalizing marijuana will solve all the budget problems. What we are saying is that right now, people are smoking marijuana. It might cost our society something, but we are currently bringing in zero in taxes and we're spending billions in a futile attempt to try to stop it. He comes up again with this Sabet conjecture that legalization will cost America. For every $1 in state and federal revenue from alcohol taxes, America spends more than 10 in social costs. Well, again, alcohol and tobacco are toxic and addictive. They're going to cost more in social costs. They're toxic and addictive. And furthermore, alcohol leads people to be dumbasses and do violent things. That's going to cost society more as well. We've always pointed out that Canadian study that found the social cost of one tobacco smoker was $800 to Canada. The social cost of one drinker was $300 to Canada. And the social cost of one cannabis smoker, $20. You think we can collect $20 worth of taxes on a pot smoker in a year? Number 6 myth. Legal marijuana. Oh, Portugal and the Netherlands provide successful models of legalization. Well, yes, they do. Except it's not really legalization, it's decriminalization, which Kevin Sabet likes to point out. But he tries to say that in Portugal there's some, you know, confusion or there's some argument about whether it's been successful. I look shit up. So I went to the EMCDDA, which is the basically it's the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, Europe's version of this. And I looked up the data sheets for Portugal and found that drug use in Portugal, this is cannabis use, excuse me, in Portugal in 2011 was 16%. Among young adults, it was 6.7%. Among all adults, it was 3.6%. Okay, so 16, 6.7, and 3.6. What were the numbers for other countries in Europe? Well, gosh, in the United Kingdom, 25% of school kids, 12.3% of young adults, 6.9% of all adults, about double the prevalence among young adults and all adults, and a much greater prevalence among the kids. How about France? 39% in schools, 17.5% of young adults, 8.4% of all adults. How about Germany? 19% in schools, 11% for young adults, 4.8% for all adults. And Spain, right next door to Portugal, 19% for all schools, 11.1% for young adults, 4.8% for all adults. In all those countries, 9.6% for all adults, 17% for young adults. And we don't have a number for the schools for Spain. Regardless, right next door to Portugal and all throughout the European Union in the largest economies, much greater use of marijuana than they've got in Portugal. And finally, number 7, people have always smoked marijuana and always will. Why try to stop it? This is where he tries to say that only 8% of the people smoke pot, that 52% drink, 27% use tobacco. Because they're addictive. You always leave that part out. More people use them because they are addictive, not just because they're legal. And if more people smoke pot, it's a good thing.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
When more people smoke pot, less of them binge drink, less of them drunk drive, less of them beat their wives, less of them overdose on prescriptions. I'm Radical Russ. That's all the time I got. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.